connected to our friends in this, and you don't need to look that far to see. Hello everyone, this is your always tactful host, Pendy.
And this is Paul, also known as Eastax Twitch.
Merry Christmas, everyone! Ho ho ho! This is Santa Tact. Have you been good little boys and girls?
Oh wow, it's Santa Tact. I've been good, Santa. I still have my tax passport and I've been buying all the gems. I'm financially ruined, but it's all good.
Ho ho ho! Very good, children. I have a special gift for you. Are you ready?
Of course. What is it?
An end of service announcement. Enjoy your holidays. I'm off to cancel more Square Enix gacha games. Ho ho ho!
Ah, that's a horrible present.
But what happened? I missed it. Was that Santa Tact? Did we get more Dragon Quest waifus?
No, you might want to check your in-game announcements.
What?
No! Aw. While Pendy tries to get over the shock and horror of the Dragon Quest Tact end of service announcement, I'll go ahead and welcome our audience to Tactfully Die, a Slime Time podcast spinoff that covers just about everything in the world of Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Die, and the Dragon Quest Tact mobile game.
That's right. We'll talk about the latest and maybe not so greatest with Dragon Quest Tact first.
Good. I'd love to cancel some Tact. Wait, no, I wouldn't.
That's right, tacticians. We aren't bringing you tidings of joy. We bring the horrors of misery. The global version of Dragon Quest Tact will be shutting down after 3 years while the Japanese version lives on.
The announcement was made on December 26th. That's a very un-Merry Christmas to us.
Not a smooth move, especially with how it came down. For those of us that had passport subscriptions on Christmas Day, we all received email notifications of our monthly passports being canceled without explanation.
The actual end of service notice came the day after Christmas, just a little bit after we got those emails. So, how did I feel about that? Well, it's very bad timing, and nothing has been done to soften the blow. You know, like, they know that they have hundreds or thousands of loyal players, many of whom are actually paying money. Like, we really did put ourselves under financial strains to support the game, and just because we loved it so much. And then they callously announce that they are going to toss us aside right after a major holiday when we should be celebrating and when we expect, like, in-game celebrations. You know, Square Enix, I mean, this isn't the first mobile gacha game that they've canceled, but I would say they handled it so poorly this time. They, like I said, this is not a, there's no way the game was actually losing money. Like, enough of us spent thousands of dollars over the course of each year that they had to be taking in enough money, you know, to make translating the game worthwhile. Because it's not like they're creating the game wholesale. It's made in Japan. It's already made. They just have to translate it and deal with, like, support issues. But gosh, you know, we supported them, and if they had only waited like a month or even 2 months to make this announcement, it's just so bad. And the timing of it, I mean, we'll talk about this more in a future episode, but the timing of it to me indicates that it was a sudden decision on their part, you know, possibly having to do with the end of the year coming up. But they were just getting ready to roll out all this new content, you know, the rank 9 things and the big Dragon Quest 1 event and such, and for them to just suddenly cancel it was very bad timing for us. But I'm sure there were people on the actual translation team who were surprised by it and disappointed as well. So yeah, I had to complain all about that. But I will say one more thing. The way they canceled this, and the fact that we haven't gotten any kind of compensation to help us, you know, maintain a positive feelings about the game until the actual end of service, it just shows how little Square Enix, or perhaps the developer, but I'm thinking Square Enix, how little they care about their mobile players outside of Japan. Like, obviously in Japan, they're just raking in that money and these games last for like 10 years sometimes, but they don't seem to care about us. And like, yeah, companies, big companies don't necessarily care a whole lot about you, but like, wow, they care so little about us, and it hurts. It sucks.
Yeah, there seemed to be a whole slew of Square Enix gacha games that got the axe all at once, and we seemed to be a part of that, which was too bad. And this one seemed, like you said, this one seemed to be pretty successful, especially compared to some of the past gacha games that have been past Dragon Quest gacha games that they have tried outside of Japan, but did not work out so well. Something else I wanted to bring up too was, how did you try and get any refunds? I ended up being able to, I'm an Apple customer, and I put in for refunds for like the last, well, they only let you go so far back, like 60 days for Apple customers. So I was able to put in refunds for like 21 transactions that I did, and I got refunds back for 18 of those 21 transactions.
Wow.
And the three that I didn't get were done through Target gift cards. So I understand why those were an issue. But everything that I did, like, you know, directly through Apple, I got refunds for. Did you have any luck with refunds or no?
Dang, dude, you lucked out. I could say that somebody else in our guild who bought from Apple, I think it was The Last Dawn, he said he didn't successfully get any refunds. I don't know I don't know if he messed up his application for refund somehow, but still, he had real bad luck with that. Now, us Android users, many of us were able to get like three or four refunds. Some people got slightly more, but I believe I hit four total refunds. So, I mean, I'm glad I got some money back. You know, it's like, because that's another thing. This sudden cancellation means that all of a sudden a bunch of people are getting refunds, which means that Square Enix loses the money for all those refunds. You know, they don't get paid that amount.
Right.
So, I mean, boy, they just shot themselves in the foot there. But at least many of us got some money back, which takes a little bit of the sting out. Because like, hey, here's some bad news, but here's $300 for you. And yeah, that makes it a little better.
Yeah, I was happy that I was able to get those refunds. I wasn't sure how that was going to go, but you know, I did the normal refund process. I put other, and then that if you put other, then you have to explain exactly why you're doing the refund. I said, hey, the game unexpectedly is now shutting down, and I put that reason for every one of them, and it worked. So,
well, good for you. I'm glad that worked out.
But despite the game being shut down, we carry on. East X and I plan to play this game to its completion up to 29 February. Now, I don't know about your specific reasons, but I just enjoy playing the game. I'm looking forward to the new story missions, which I've actually already completed as of now, and the Dragon Quest 1 event, which will be coming out soon, among others.
Yes. One reason that I couldn't quit playing right away is because I really care about our guild, you know? And while we do have some people in the guild who lacked fortitude, shall we say, I only blame them a little, but most of the guild wanted to stick together, you know, because we feel that shared sense of like teamwork and responsibility to each other. That's to me the disappointing thing about, you know, a few certain ones who quit is like they're only thinking of themselves and not everyone else, right? But for me, I could not quit because I am thinking about everyone else, you know, like somebody's got to keep the guild going and all that. So anyway, I'm still having fun with the game. Like you said, I mean, they just added a bunch of new content. It's like that content doesn't stop being fun. If we were able to continue buying things with real money, you wouldn't want to invest in anything since it's all going to go away. But still, that's 2 months of a very fun mobile game that we've loved for 2 or 3 years, right? Is it 3 years? Right.
Yeah, it'll be 3 years. 3 years and 1 month when it finally closes down at the end of February. Yeah, and it's been interesting because we got some people from other guilds to join our guild who had, where their guilds basically said like, ah, screw this, and they all kind of fell off. And so there's some people like, hey, I want to join us. You know, they joined us because we're actually still going on a little bit.
That's right. And yeah, it's nice to, we have some more active chatters coming and joining our guild. You know, it's that's good because what I've always enjoyed about our guild is just the friendly atmosphere that we've been able to maintain.
Yeah, it's been a great community. All those guild pull parties that we've done in the past and whatnot have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we had a couple of guild Christmas parties. Those were delightful. Now, you know, obviously I miss, still, even though we lost a few people, I miss them, but I am glad to be saving money because, and we could talk about it more in the future episode, but yeah, being so into this game has not been helpful financially, you know, and I hate to just suddenly complain about it when I really would have just kept on playing and spending money and all that, but I need to, yeah, you know, alleviate my debt. I need to, sometimes there's a big event and you're like, okay, I got to put some of this on a credit card, and that's not healthy habits, right? So it will be good to be able to pay those things down and then just move forward and avoid gacha games in the future. I'm going to avoid all gacha games, but even if I was somehow tempted to play one, never again would it be a Square Enix one.
No, I mean, for me, I'm not too, a lot of people got super pissed off like, this is ridiculous and blah, blah, blah. But for me, it's just like, oh, well, this is not my first rodeo. Unfortunately, I've been through the cancellation of Stars. I've been through the cancellation of Die, kind of, sort of. I didn't really play that game, but I did come in after it got canceled. It was just like, oh, I want to play this unique story it has. So I did like the last 2 months of it. And then one that was in Southeast Asia, but was still in English, Dragon Quest Monster Superlight. I really liked that one. I was very disappointed that that shut down too. But yeah, it's not the first time this has happened to me. So I just, you know, I enjoyed the time that I had and I move on. I'm not interested in doing another gacha, but if it's Dragon Quest, that would be the only thing that could get me back in. Like if they brought over Keshi Keshi or Dragon Quest Walk, I'd be like, oh yeah, I gotta do this. I don't know if I spend money like I did in this one, but I would definitely want to participate in one of those if they were to bring them over. But yeah, just normal any other gacha game, no thanks, I'm good. I'll save my money.
Definitely. I mean, that's the thing, like if you don't play real games, I mean, I say real games, if you don't play console games and such, then like it makes, you know, and you get real into a gacha game, it's like, well, I love this gacha game. I always did love this game so much, but at the same time, I always knew that playing Tact was keeping me away from playing $60 and $70 games that I was actually interested in. You know, like it just took up a lot of time because of the addition of guilds and just all that, being a higher level player and things like that. It's so easy to now to see, well, okay, I can just enjoy all these regular premium games. You know, like I'm 13 hours into a fresh playthrough of Dragon Quest XI, and I wouldn't have been playing it that aggressively. I mean, because that's aggressive for me. Mm-hmm. If not for TAC getting canceled, but TAC got canceled, I was like, dang it, I need more Dragon Quest, and I need to finish 11, so I'm gonna go ahead and play it.
There you go. Yeah,
so that's a good thing. But you know what? I wasn't like, it's not like I was heartbroken. You know, like you said, some people act like Square Enix killed their dog, but still, like I can see just as a member of the video game industry, because you know I've been a journalist and things like that for many years. They just handled it very poorly. Like they have shown a true lack of care for a loyal fan base, and companies should not treat their customers that way. It's not one of the things where it's like, well, you know, they had to do it. It hurt, but they had to do it. Like when they canceled Dragon Quest of the Stars, it hurt, but they had to do it. It wasn't that popular. When they canceled the Die mobile game, you know, I guess it hurt a little bit because that game probably had 5 or 6 fans. but also with that one, they tried to, you know, to make it less disappointing by giving everybody daily rewards and things like that, which attracted you to play it, right?
Yeah. You could do like a 10 pull a day because they were just like giving away all sorts of stuff so that people could power up their characters and try and get through the rest of the story, especially since it not only had the normal Die story that you could get through, there was also a unique story to that game that was going on as well, so that it gave everybody a chance to finish it out.
So, and that was a smart thing of them to do. You know, like if I played that game and then they suddenly did that, I wouldn't be angry with them in the least. Like it's like I would be sad about it being canceled, but they've done things to make you not be upset with them, and that makes sense.
And the difference is with the Die mobile game, that also involved the Japanese audience because the entire thing was getting canceled. While here, this is just the global audience. So I was like, whatever. It's just the global audience. We don't care. It's not, as long as we don't piss off our Japanese fans, we're good.
I think you're actually right. Like that's probably it. There also could be the fact that it was so sudden that, like, I mean, they could still be planning to do some kind of compensation thing, compensatory thing later before the 29th. Seems unlikely, but I mean, they could be, and maybe they just haven't had time to implement it because it takes some time to do stuff.
Yeah, because like you said, it may have been kind of a sudden cancellation. So maybe there will be something down the line where they'll just start throwing gems at us so that we can do whatever for like the last month and a half or whatever, or however long we have left at that time. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, here's hoping. I mean, I just think they should. I would like to believe that they don't hate us, but they act like they hate us, and that's not cool of them.
No.
Anyway, so moving on from the cancellation of the game, what about Tactfully Die, our famous podcast that covers everything in the world Dragon Quest Tact and the Adventure of Die? Will the podcast be no more, Pinty?
Well, to all you tacticians out there, the answer is yes and no. Tactfully Die will be no more as it once was, but we will continue our Die part of the show. What name that will have and the show format is still being worked on.
I'm thinking Tactlessly Die. Doesn't it just roll off the tongue?
Oh, I love it. I love it. But I think we need to workshop that just a little bit more.
Fantactically Die?
Oh, God. Yes. Workshop. Need to workshop. I'm not. Yeah.
I thought for sure you'd bite on that one.
No.
Okay, you know what? Let's get back to the cancellation of the game for just a minute. I heard you touch on it a little bit in a recent Slime Time podcast with Ugly Idiot, who is, ironically, neither ugly nor an idiot.
Well, anything else that I have, I'm going to save for our memorial episode. We have a lot of guests lined up for that one. Unlike the end of service announcement, this is something you can actually look forward to.
We'll have many longtime members of the Aces Guild on the show to look back on our time with TAC.
Like with our other past memorial episodes, I'll see about getting some other statements from around the community as well.
Speaking of community, there is one person I'm glad is pretty much out of it.
Oh, you got that right. We've mentioned him before, but not by name. It's Kage, one of the longtime TACT YouTubers.
Yeah. Now, let me say, it doesn't make me very... I wouldn't normally want to just call someone out like this, but you wanted to call him out, so here we are. We're calling him out in public. But yeah, unfortunately for us, he has shown himself to be one of the bigger jerks in the games community.
Whether it's being rude to people, tearing others down, trying to cheat the game, or ironically accusing others of cheating, he does it all.
So he does. In a previous episode, we went over how Kage was purposely keeping his guild small in order to prey on weaker guilds and take their gem rewards.
You know, and I'm starting to think that a lot of it had to do with him driving people away from his guild and not being able to maintain a full 20. But who knows?
Could have been. There was also the time he accused me of rage quitting.
That was hilarious. You didn't even know what rage quitting in TACT actually was. Most people don't have time to finish out a battle when they've already lost. It was dumb. They're going to more efficiently use their time and just move on to the next battle. That's why they made it even easier to quit in the middle of a match later on as a quality of life feature. Why would I want to sit there with two characters left, stuck in a status effect like sleep until the end? Real rage quitting is when you close the application in the middle of the battle. Then that forces the other player to sit and wait a long time while the game tries to reconnect with you over and over again.
Thank you for understanding. Well, nobody ever said that guy was very smart.
Well, that's true.
Along those lines, there's also the irony of Kage accusing the AW Guild of cheating against Starfall when he used his guild to cheat the system openly and screw over smaller guilds.
Pot calling the kettle black moment for sure.
Why do we even bother bringing this guy up? Apparently, he had a big issue with our rule change at the Facebook group that we run.
I had seen some people mock others for wanting to do another gacha game or even for wanting to continue TACT in the Japanese server.
Yeah, and that alone goes against one of our group rules asking members to be kind and courteous to people.
That part wasn't anything new, but we did bolster it with a new rule asking to respect people who wanted to pursue the Japanese version of TACT. You know, we didn't want this stupid gatekeeping going on. We didn't care if people warned others that playing the Japanese version was a bad idea or that spending money on a gacha was a bad idea also. We didn't care if people took issue with Square Enix at all and called them out. We just weren't going to stand for people openly mocking each other for doing so.
But heaven forbid we would want something like that. So Kage took issue with it. He was apparently on a rampage, in fact, seeing as how he also got himself banned from the main Discord for TACT.
So we made a YouTube video complaining about his ban from the Discord and mocking us and our group rules.
That's right. He made a video mocking us. And when he posted the video in our group, he said that he would probably be removed for it.
And he was right. And so we did. What's funny is that our rule update post ended up with 59 positive reactions. We get, you know, generally good vibes from it. But his video rant had no reactions or comments. And I actually didn't even notice it until 3 days after he posted it.
May we never have to notice him again. Thus ends our time with the biggest troll in the community. Like he's fond of saying, this had to be said.
On an even happier note, our guild closed out the latest guild arena tournament in December with a big win.
That's right. As we went over in the last episode, we stumbled out of the gate with a loss to Suba, but then we were undefeated the rest of the tournament. In the Platinum League, it came down to one last tough opponent.
We needed every win as they weren't backing down. They had no losses to our defense, so it came down to whoever scored the most. Their guild was much improved from the last time we had faced them.
You and I made a pretty good tactical move, too.
We did. I waited to claim my fight, but at that time, there was nothing left but 4 to 5 hard S-Dark teams left. I noticed you had a team reserved that I could easily 160 with my box, get the max points.
Uh-huh. You knew there was some help. My highly awakened legendary monster wrangler, Luca, was a perfect S-Dark killer.
Yeah, so we made the switch. I 160'd what you had previously reserved, and then you got some help, and you were able to get a 160 against one of the big S-Dark teams.
Go us! We had some pretty great coaching all around. I remember Dios being particularly enthusiastic about us all working together.
We only won about maybe by around 100 points, so it was a fantastic last match to win out the tournament.
Now, we have another tournament whose lead-up time has started just as we record tonight.
Our Aces 1 guild has a few new people that joined us from other guilds, but we still only have about 18 people right now.
It'll be interesting to see how this one goes.
Now, what's also been interesting is the new rank 9 that just debuted. I have 16 of my rank S's upgraded, and most of them leveled up to 140. I had a lot of experience scrolls in the bank. I also have a smattering of A ranks and below that I took to rank 9 as well. Usually the more useful ones like Rose Guardian or the Ghost or Stump Chump, that's what I mainly did, and any of the lower ranks that are with the current Battle Robe, which is normally what I do with every new event. How about you?
Well, I only have 9 fully leveled S ranks and a scant 2 fully leveled A ranks, but I have a lot more units than that who I've actually ranked up. I just haven't started leveling them yet.
Gotcha.
I have a lot of experience scrolls. I'm used to kind of hoarding resources, so it's hard for me to just burn through them all. But yeah, I'll continue with that. You know, like I'm doing new battle road, or I'm going back to older battle roads, and I'm just like ranking up everybody for that battle road, you know? So
nice.
I'll have more pretty soon.
Cool. So a few days ago, story mode also got updated.
Yep, there are now 4 chapters in part 5. The new story involves the slime-headed lady that you said is way too hot, teaming up with the heroes to try to rescue a continent that's populated by mostly undead monsters. I enjoyed the new levels, but I'm sad that we won't be getting more of the story in the global version. How did you like the new content?
I enjoyed the story of our team trying to help out this continent of undead monsters. And yes, the more Lumixia, the better. I can't get enough of that silly character design. Uh-huh. I'm just sad that only half of the story for this final fiend is going to come out, and we're going to miss the rest of it. And after this would have been the final bad guy after, you know, defeating all the fiends at this point. So we're going to miss out on that too. So I'm very sad that we're going to miss out on all that story content, because I've enjoyed it. Like, some people just go through it, ignore it, just get the gems or whatever. But I like this. I like Mendini. I like Magellan. I like the little misadventures that we get in with them and the overall story of this game. So it's sad that we don't get to see the rest of it.
Yeah.
But oh well. So in this story mode, there's also a new A rank unit, the Blood Mage. But, you know, it's not that we can do much with it now.
That is true. I've got the guy up to 3 hearts, I think. I'm going for 4 and then I'm going to stop. But yeah, I like all the main characters except for really Malini, you know, the bad Sanguini. Isn't that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. He's pretty annoying. Like there were times when he'd be like a little bit amusing, but I would say the more they used him, the more annoying he got, to where you just want to see him get his comeuppance.
He or she, since they couldn't decide on what gender to name him or her, since they kept using both.
That is true. But yeah, that uppance unfortunately will never come. Not in English anyway.
Nope. No more Rochester. That was a fun name too.
Oh yeah. That was a fun name. And yeah, we wanted to see him get his due as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, it would be nice if somebody in the community continues to play the Japanese version and they give us like a fan subtitled translation of the further story stuff. They could.
Oh, there is that one guy that likes to do those dubs for those Japanese videos, for those trailers. I forget the name of him off the top of my head, but maybe he might do some in the future. I don't know if he's continuing on with the Japanese version, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. If he did, I mean, I know that like we've got all the people in our Facebook group, a lot of those people would like to know what happens further in the story. So we'll see how it goes.
I think the good guys might win. That might be part of it. Possibly.
Well, here's hoping. But yeah, no, it's more like the character interactions.
I get you. I know. I understand. Yeah.
Now then, before we get into the die portion of the show, it's time for the tact tip of the day.
Tip of the day.
Did you know that the Reminiscence Battle Roads can be used for leveling up your units?
That's right, tacticians. With rank 9 upon us, those battle roads can be a lifesaver for getting some of your characters leveled up.
It won't cost you any stamina. You can auto-battle it 100 battles at a time.
That's amazing! That was our tact tip of the day. Tip of the day! Now let's get into some die.
Every episode, we're going to review 3, count them, 3 episodes from the newest Dragon Quest The Adventure of Die anime.
We'll also get into other related news we find in the world of die as well.
So let's start by talking about episode 56, The Inherited Heart. In this episode, Mom, Crocodine, and the others discuss King Vern's mysterious palace. The palace resembles a floating bird-shaped ship for some reason. The heroes go off to find Die, who was saved from the Black Core's blast by his father, Baron. Sadly, this took every bit of life out of Baron to the point where he couldn't be healed. Sapped of his life energy, reverted to his humanoid form, and no longer even able to see, Baron calls out for Die. The two Dragon Knights share a moment together as Baron passes away. A piece of Baron's heart is then transferred to Die, and the father tells his son that he will never leave his side. Baron's spirit then encourages Die to face King Vern. Pop thinks that Baron's death is too much for Die and that the team needs to retreat and regroup. The others disagree, however, and point out that Baron has forged a path for them to more easily confront King Vern, and they must do so before the villains can regroup. Di agrees, but before they can move out, Kill Vern and Miss Vern appear. They introduce Dark King Vern, who now appears in front of the heroes as well. King Vern is impressed with the party's might, so he decides to reward them by personally battling them. His other warriors will stand aside. We end the episode with the battle about to take place.
So I thought this was a very touching moment for Di to connect with his father before he moved on. I also thought it was weird that his dragonoid form was just floating there for quite a while before he fell to the ground. I think they just wanted that dramatic image, which it was, but it kind of falls apart if you think about it too much. Now, the pop moments in this episode were great. Whether it was getting harassed by Mom or reacting to King Vern's arrival, it was all very entertaining. This episode did a good job of getting me really hyped up for the fight to come.
Well, Dragonoid Baron's floating body falls apart, you say? Not until it hits the ground.
Oh.
The gray burnout image of him floating there is certainly a striking visual. And plus, you know, there's magic involved. Everybody's so worried for Di when he first wakes up. Their love for Di is touching, as is Di's love for his father. This is a good little pause in the fighting, but the clash will resume in the next episode.
Speaking of the next episode is episode 57, The God of the Underworld. In this episode, Di and company start their battle against Dark King Vern. King Vern, hey Vern, causes Di to lose his cool by incinerating his father's body. Di rushes in for an attack, leaving himself open to Vern's dark aura attack. The others rush to protect and heal Di, while Vern unleashes all manner of frizz-based attacks. Di manages to recover during that time, so he rises and takes on King Vern. Once again, the young hero is able to cut through Vern's frizz attacks and deflect his boom spells. Di then unleashes a full draconic aura-powered strash that blasts King Vern directly, seemingly taking him out.
Indeed, Dark King Vern is so scary in this episode. We see how tough he is when he swats Di into unconsciousness right at the start. It is a trope to take out the most powerful hero right away in order to create a sense of danger for the remaining heroes, but it works. Things are genuinely desperate for them until Di recovers. Vern's bounce spell is unfair, of course, but he also has bounce for his first two moves intact, so that didn't surprise me. I'm glad that Mom lands a good blow on Vern, even if it ends up not counting for much. At least we can imagine for a moment that the other heroes could take out Vern if things went their way. This episode does Crocodine a bit dirty, so I really hope he gets a moment to shine later in the series. Crocodine has become like Piccolo in Dragon Ball Z. He's a great fighter, but he's outclassed by the big bad, so he takes a lot of abuse.
Oh yeah, and I thought it was fun to learn that Dark King Vern's spells were so powerful that everyone didn't realize it at first. What they thought was a kafrizz was really a very powerful frizz, and that his boom spells had the power of a kaboom spell.
Yeah.
You know, I agree that I love the whole team trying to take Vern down. Too often, anime boils down to just one-on-one fights, so it's fun to see team efforts like this. And, you know, like you brought up as well, Crocodine's only role seems to be getting abused. He just seems to be the punching bag now in the show. We need to show the bad guy's true strength. Well, just have him beat up Crocodine. Okay. That just seems to be what they keep doing with him. Now, King Vern's version of Kafrizz, the Kaiser Phoenix, is really cool. I really love that. I like the concept and I like how it looked. And Pop saving Mam is great to see. It was fun how it showed his intelligence in the moment. I really appreciated that. Oh, and I really liked Gomi-chan and Pororo just going at each other. I thought that was hilarious. It was a fun moment away from the action.
Yeah,
this whole episode was just a really good opening act to the fight. My heart was really pumping towards the end when Di was going all out.
Well, there's more fight to come in episode 58, The Unlikely Savior. Dark King Vern returns to the fight immediately with a full heal. That's not fair. He realizes he can't win barehanded, so he summons his weapon, the Staff of Edacity. Fun fact, Edacity means like a great uncontrollable hunger.
Oh.
It draws upon his immense magical power and converts it into raw attack power. Di and Vern take each other head on, and Vern is able to break Di's sword in two. Oh no. He then unleashes the Calamitous Wall, a wall of energy that can't be stopped. When it seems that the fight is lost, a mysterious figure crushes the floor, breaking up the Calamitous Wall and sending the party of heroes down to the ocean below. This mysterious figure is none other than Hadlar, who has come to take down Vern. Hadlar still wants to fight Di for his own purpose. His royal guard comes to his aid as well, but they're held off by Mist Vern and Kill Vern. Hadlar has the edge in Vern's weakened state, but Zabuera appears and uses magic to hold Hadlar in place, the dirty cheater. King Vern goes in for a killing blow, but Block the Rook surprises everybody by using his castle ability to swap places with his master. Hadlar escapes with his other chess piece minions. The Mother Dragon then appears to carry off Di, and the fates of Crocodine and Hyunkle are unknown.
A whole lot happened happens in this episode. Like, a lot. It was great. I loved the reappearance of Hadlar. You know, I've seen this series all the way through subbed before, but I had completely forgotten about this fight between King Vern, hey Vern, and Hadlar. So much fun to be had there before the dastardly Zaborera ruins everything. You know, maybe if Hadlar had treated him with some measure of respect in the past, this wouldn't have happened. If you think back, Hadlar always treated him pretty badly. And I really like chess. So anytime they lean into chess concepts in the show, I eat it up. Castling to swap out Hadlar for block was fantastic. As episodes go, this is one of my favorite ones. Great action and character moments. And also, I almost forgot to mention this, the Staff of Audacity, and they talk about it in the show, is based off the Somatic Staff or something like that. I may be mispronouncing Somatic. That. Thank you. Somatic Staff. But that's a weapon that's actually from the Dragon Quest series directly. You can get it in Dragon Quest 3. It's actually a really great weapon for people who aren't normally fighters. I love the show using that concept that was directly from the games for that kind of weapon. So that was awesome. Love that. And on a side note, I'd like to say, again, how much I love the dub of the current opening song. The English versions of the songs in the show are usually, you know, kind of a step below their Japanese counterparts, but I do really like this one in particular. I forget if I mentioned it before, but the flourish that they added to the halfway point of the show is fantastic as well.
You mentioned that Hadlar isn't very nice to Zaborera. Maybe he would treat Zaborera better if Zaborera looked less like a flaccid penis.
Well, I guess that explains everything then.
I think so. So yeah, this is a thrilling episode. The heroes feel so desperate before their rescue. I was quite annoyed with Dai, though, for becoming so easily demoralized. I mean, it's BS that his legendary sword, supposedly the best one ever made, gets destroyed so easily. Like, come on. But still, that doesn't mean that Dai should suddenly let his friends and the whole world down. Just like, oh no, my sword, I don't care about anything now. No, don't be like that. That's not heroic in the least. I really had no idea how the heroes were going to survive. And then Hadlar showed up. It's wild how the show has us rooting for him after he started out so evil. I also love how Hadlar is genuinely upset about Block's sacrifice. It's not like Block ever got any character development because he never spoke before this episode, but Hadlar cares for the members of his team, and that's touching. I sure hope Crocodine and Hyokul are okay. We'll find out in the next installment of our podcast.
So related to today's episodes, I was actually able to meet the English voice actor for Hadlar, Flazard, and other minor characters from the show like the King of Turan.
Really? How'd that come about?
So the voice actor, Brian Drummond, was a last-minute add to Animate in Raleigh, North Carolina. He flew in from Vancouver, Canada to do it too.
Do you think that this Brian Drummond is related to Ryan Drummond, the original voice of Sonic the Hedgehog in Sonic Adventure?
I don't know. That'd be something I'll have to look up.
There's no telling. People still like Ryan Drummond, though, and he is really cool.
Mm.
So I heard you're at an anime convention. How'd you get to interact with this Brian Drummond there?
Yes. And, you know, now that I think about it, this Brian Drummond has recently done some Sonic voice work as well. So that would be really ironic if he was related to the other one.
Yeah, it'd be wild.
Yeah. But yeah, I went to his booth and I had the box for my Flazard figure and my Southeast Asian English copy of Infinity Strash signed by him. We did a selfie with the Flazard figure and I even had him do a recording.
A recording? I wonder where and when that might pop up in the show.
I don't know. A mystery, I guess.
Anything else you got to do with him?
Well, besides chatting him up at his booth, I went to a Q&A panel he was doing later. He's also famous for doing the original Vegeta on Dragon Ball Z, Benny in Black Lagoon, and Ryuk from Death Note. During the Q&A, I got to ask him how he managed to do so many difficult voices for Dai at once, especially when we had Hadlar and Flazard going on at the same time. I imagine yelling so much in Hadlar, and especially Flazard's voice, would be rough on him.
Yep, that's got to be brutal.
It is. He said back in the Dragon Ball Z days, everything was less regulated, and he'd be screaming as Vegeta for more than 8 hours at a time on different occasions. One time, he completely lost his voice doing it. He said now there's a union that he's a part of where they only do about 4 hours at a time, and they have breaks. So he doesn't have to worry about it as much these days.
You did ask the most important question, right?
Most important question?
The one I suggested you ask, of course. Did you ask him why he doesn't do something like Cameo? For those out there that don't know, Cameo is a service where you can pay to have celebrities record custom videos for you. Just like that guy with Gilbert Gottfried about there being no plans to release Dragon Quest X in the West.
Enough! This game will never be in English! there are no plans for a worldwide release.
But yes, he explained that doing something like Cameo is risky for him because he does a lot of villain voices that are very hard on his throat. Inevitably screaming something like, "It's over 9,000! 50 times in a day could make it hard for him to work his actual acting gigs. And if you look at his IMDb, he is a very busy man. So he said he would love to do it, but he would need a large break in his work schedule to make it work.
I suppose that's a fair reason, but I still hope that he chooses to do so someday. Or at least other people who worked on the show could do it. Because for other people who don't know, there is not one Dragon Quest voice actor who is available on Cameo, despite the fact that there are lots of voice anime voice actors on Cameo, you know? Full Metal Alchemist, other Dragon Ball actors, lots and lots of different things. There's just nobody who has ever done voices for the Dragon Quest games or for the Dai show, unfortunately.
It's too bad.
Yeah, what a shame. Did he say anything else that was interesting?
So apparently, Dragon Quest The Adventure of Dai is one of the first anime shows that Ocean Studios out of Canada has done in a while. All the voice actors were excited to be doing it again. I hope they get to do more too. I really liked what they did back in the day with shows like Black Lagoon, Death Note, Inuyasha, and others. He also encouraged the audience at the Q&A to check out the Adventure of Dai anime at the end of his panel. That was cool to see.
That's very cool of him. And yeah, that's nice of you to wish for him as well. I still think the Dai dub is a bit below average compared to other modern anime dubs, but I'm sure the studio would get better if they kept doing more shows. You know, they'd hit their stride before too long.
Yeah, maybe a little rusty coming back to it after being away from it for so long, but like they have some really good voice talent over there. So I think they could really knock some stuff out of the park once they get going again.
That would be sweet. And that's all for this episode of Slime Time Tactfully Die. If you want to prepare for the next episode, be sure to watch episodes 59, 60, and 61 of The Adventure of Die, subtitled on Crunchyroll or dubbed on Hulu.
We're a non-profit podcast. We won't five finger flares your hard-earned gold when we can offer you quality content for free. But if you do have some extra gold that's just completely burning a hole in your wallet, pouch, bottomless bag, treasure chest, or searchable wall sack, and you would like to donate anything to a website that's been supporting Dragon Quest fans for over 25 years, stop by the Dragon's Den by clicking the link in the show notes. There are several ways to support the Den, including the affiliate links that won't cost you anything extra when making other Dragon Quest purchases.
We even have a Slime Time t-shirt that was designed by a resident artist, Dwayne. See the link for it in the show notes.
As part of the Slime Time Extended Universe, or STU, you can direct comments or questions for the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at DQ Slime Time.
And you can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/EastXTwitch. Come watch me play a variety of games every Saturday, kids.
Join in tons of Dragon Quest discussion at the Dragon's Den forums or Discord and the Dragon Questers and Dragon Quest Tact global Facebook groups.
We'd like to thank everybody that made this podcast possible, including Pendy, Woodus, the Dragon's Den, and Malcolm. Not Malcolm, the former Tact community manager, though. Malcolm in the middle is way cooler. Life is unfair.
Please like, subscribe, and write a review for the podcast.
We'll catch you later, everybody. Don't hate, appreciate.
Time to zoom on out of here.
This is Slime Time! General Flazzard here! Beware my five-finger flip!